Accession number 31415.
Real 16. Now you mentioned the Conqueror. I don't know the Conqueror at all. Tell us about the
Conqueror. Well, the only place you find the Conqueror is down at Bovington Museum.
So what was it? What was the Conqueror? What was it like?
Well, it was a massive, great tank. It was massive. I mean, massive. And I forget what the caliber of the barrel was, but it had a hell of a barrel. I can tell you when it was fired, the damn thing used to leap. And it used to push itself back. The recoil made it go back, you know? And it used to dig itself a large tank. What they did, they issued it, when it was brought into service, they issued one to every squadron in each regiment of armoured regiments. And by the late 1960s, going into the 70s, it became a museum piece.
Was it any good? I mean, what was wrong?
Well, it was a fantastic tank. Oh, the size of it was unbelievable. But it was not economical. It was the shells and that were not economical. And also, it did about 2 miles to about 5 gallons of petrol. Because they still had petrol engines. And it was... If you ever get a chance to go, you know, if you get down to Bobby, there's one at Bobby, and you'll see what I'm talking about, the bloody size of it.
Now, what were you doing? What else were you doing down there? Or were you just working in the gun workshop?
We worked in the gun workshops, because they knew, I got in a fight down there.
Now, what caused that?
Well, this guy, you got a lot of animosity, you know, from other blokes in regiments, you see. When they saw you, and you had the two latest medal ribbons up, they sort of took the mickey, and they were more or less jealous. But as I used to say to them, well, you had the chance to go, why didn't you bloody well go? Not me. Well, what are you picking on us for? Because there was quite a few of us down there at the time. Anyway, this guy was funny. He was a corporal. In the Queen's Bays, they wear two stripes for a lance jack, and they're only a full corporal when they've got this coat of arms over the stripes, a badge, a silver badge. So anyway, he pushed me a bit too far, so I nutted him, and I had a right old scrap, and I gave him a good hiding. Anyway, what happened was, typical of his type, he went to the guardroom and reported me to the guardroom, and he told him I beat him up for no reason at all. But there were witnesses, you see. So I was put in the guardroom, and I went before the old man he was ex-asshole cavalry, the colonel down there. He was asshole cavalry, but he was like me on an ERE posting, the colonel. I don't remember whether it was blues or the lifeguards, but anyway, he was ex-asshole cavalry, And I told him the story, and I said, there's witnesses. So then, this corporal was in there, and he was denying everything, and one thing and another. So then I said, well, I've got witnesses. So the provost sergeant says, well, we have got the witnesses outside if you want to see them. So they marched me out, and they brought the witnesses in, and this corporal. And he was put up in one of the other offices. So when these witnesses went in and they saw the colonel, they told him. So anyway, the colonel called me back in, and the witnesses weren't there. So he said, I understand now what's happened at this thing. On this other, this corporal came back in because he had to be there with me, see. So he said, I understand what this is. He said, I've got to deal with you because you struck an NCO, right? So anyway, he told the MCO to leave while he spoke to me and give me a sentence. So he said, I'm not referring you for a court-martial. He said, I'm dealing with this myself. He said, because you're due for demob. He said, when is it? He said, I said, in a fortnight's time. He said, oh. So he said to me, right, 14 days in the guard room, right? So I got 14 days in the guard room. So anyway, he gave this lance jack a dressing down. and he got him posted. Posted him back to the Queen's base with the recommendation that he be busted, put back to the ranks. So anyway, I'd done my 14 days and I was overdue for demob. But while I was doing my 14 days, the provost sergeant came in, he said, the old man wants to see you in the morning, he said, so you put on your best BD, boots and gaiters, belt and gaiters, he said, and your berry. Now, I'm in the Nixie, you're not supposed to wear it. But he says, tomorrow you must go out of this guard room dressed with your berry. So I went to the CO's office, and then when I was called in, marched in, got my attention, saluted the old man. He's got all my paperwork in front of me, isn't he? So he's talking to me and one thing and another, and he says, do you know what he said? You're one of the characters of the army, he said. We can't do without you, chaps, he said. He said, you're a character. He said, since you've been here, he said, we know you're a character from different people to speak to and different officers that you've dealt with. So he said to me, what I want you in here for, he said, have you ever considered signing on? Now, I've just done 40 days in the guard room. And that's what he wanted me for, to sign on. I said, I don't think so, sir. I don't think so. I said,
why not?
Well, just at the time, I was a bit down. I was actually down, you know. I was a bit down, and I thought, I'm gonna go out, and I'm gonna see what Civvy Street's like.
So when was this? When did you go out?
I went out, and I should have been demobbed on the day before I went in. So you always get demobbed the day before. Well, I should have gone out on the 13th of December, but I didn't go out till New Year's Eve is when I went out. I went out New Year's Eve.
55. So what was the demobilisation process? Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, no, yeah. So anyway, they said to me, are you going to Woking for demob suit? I said, I'm going to Woking for a demob suit. So he said, right. So he said, you've got to be quick today, he said. Because he said they're closed tonight, you know, for Christmas. For New Year. Sorry. So I got to Woking, went straight to Woking, I had a railway warrant for Woking and a railway warrant from Woking to Romford. So I got to Woking and I went, it was massive. It was like when you went in, there were double doors like that, bigger than that, but you went in. And as you went in, it's done out like a massive Woolworths. With all these, you're walking down these corridors, like you do in a Woolworths, you know, not the modern day. But remember when they had all the counters and you walk through? Well, this is what it was like. And there was all these counters with all different shirts. And there was counters with all different underwear and a counter for socks. And then and your suits was hanging on racks and you had to pick your suit and try it on and the trousers. But everything fitted, you know. When you got you got a suit and you looked at it and it told you the length of the inside leg, which was an unusual thing in those days. You either got a pair of suit that fit you with the jacket and the trousers was too long.
Now, what was the suit like? Was it any good?
Beautiful. Beautiful suit. It was a grey. It was a kind of a grey and black flag. I've seen that material in modern day suits. And when I've got up and I say, what are you doing with my demob suit on? I do it for a laugh.
So it was good quality.
It was a good quality suit, and I had a beautiful raincoat. That was fantastic. It was a beige colour with a belt. I had a navy blue trilby, beautiful trilby. The only thing wrong with the shirts were nice, but the shirts was detached collars. And I've still got the collar studs upstairs from the mob suit. You've got a back and a front stud, because we never had them in the army.
Now, were you given any advice on or training for getting in back into civilian life?
Yeah, I went on a month's course before I was demobbed.
Now, what was the course about?
I went to do a PSV driving course.
A driving? PSV?
Yeah, for a bus, to a coach driver. I went to a PSV licence, it was called. And I went on one that for a month. I went down to Borden for that.
Was that a good course, coach driving?
Yeah, but the guy that was running, it was a private coach company. Creamline Motors, it was called. And it was down, and I stayed at the time, because it's all gone now, I stayed at the Royal Army Service Corps depot. I was billeted in the depot. And I went in my uniform in BD, but I took a civvy suit. I had to wear civvies. And I wore my civvy suit, what I'd bought, you know, and civvy clothes to go on this course. And then after about a week, I got bored with it. I got bloody bored because he was using us to transport these buses. He wasn't teaching us with an instructor. And the instructor was in there, but he wasn't doing nothing. He wasn't telling you what you should be doing and what you shouldn't do and how you should be, you know. And after a week, I said to this fellow I palled out with, I said, I'm packing this one in. I said, I've had enough of this. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to stay for the course, but I'm going to finish and I'm not going to worry about passing the test or nothing. I said, this bloke, we won't pass. Well, none of us pass. Isn't that strange? When it come to doing the driving test and they come from the Ministry of Transport to give us our test, none of us pass. Because he didn't teach us. He didn't teach us, in them days, it was highway code. He didn't teach us how we did, and he didn't teach you to reverse properly. We couldn't do none of that. So anyway, I actually wasted. I wasted that. I should have gone on another course, you know, something like to do what I did when I went in the army, a decorator. I should have gone on a proper decorator's course.
Now, what were you going to do? You see, you were out of the army. What were you going to do?
Well, I come home. I went home, and my first job, because I was paying fantastic money, was one of the best paid money jobs going. I got a job at Briggs's Motor Body, which was a private company. It was an independent company to Ford's, but it made all Ford bodies for the Ford cars. It was at Dagenham, and they had a belt running from the main factory, a conveyor belt, which took the bodies, finished bodies, to Ford's to have the engines and that put in, and the wheels and all that, you know, and the axles. We've done all the body work. And I was a door hanger and setter. I got the job and was trained as a door hanger and setter.
So how long did you do that for?
I done that for about 2 months. I didn't do it no more. What happened was...
Why not?
Well, I was on permanent nights. And on these permanent nights, we had a bloke called... He had the name Bellringer McLaughlin. He was a communist, an out-and-out communist. And he was fired, eventually got rid of him. He worked for Plessis originally. And he caused that much trouble at Plessis... It was unbelievable. What he used to do, he used to sabotage the conveyor belts. We were working on, you know, conveyor belts. You'd have so long to put the doors, hang them and set them and get them. And then you'd go to the next one behind you, or there'd be somebody else, every other one or whatever it was, the case may be. And he would end up having a strike at 1 o'clock in the bloody morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. And of course, in those days, you couldn't get home. I lived over in Hornchurch. And it was a hell of a walk from Ford's to from Briggs's.
And he was a trade unionist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You had to be in the trade union. Anyway, he come round.
No, he was. I mean,
the whole lot. It was all, you had to be in the union anyway. But he was the union official.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And his name was McLaughlin, as I said. And this particular day, I wouldn't stop work. And I was still working when he come round. And he threatened me with a hammer. I said, you either use that effing hammer, I said. Or I said, I'll use it on you and I'll smash your bloody skull in. I said, I lost a few mates, I said, fighting you bastards. And I'm not going to bloody have you tell me what to do. I said, and I was 5 years in the army and I'm having people, arseholes like you, tell me what to do. Because I didn't mix me words. So I put my tools down. I went over to see the foreman. He was quite a nice, Mr. Mooney, I think his name was. Anyway, he was a nice fella, big man. I said to him, I'm going home now, I'm not coming back anymore. I said, would you give my notice in whatever it is that's got to happen? I said, I'm a good man to go back in the bloody army. I said, I'll come out. I said, I might as well be in there. I said, these are worse than a load of bloody women in a bloody cat fight. I said, in a cat house. He said to me, yeah? I said, yeah. I said, it is. I said, the way he's walking about, strutting about here, I said, I'm not having bastards like him telling me what to do. So anyway, I walked out, I got my coat, and I walked home that, I walked all the way home that night. It was 2 o'clock when I got, it was gone, it took me over an hour to get home, hour and a half. And my mum wondered what I got in, because she heard the key go in the door and she called out. I said, is that you, Dad? I said, yeah. I said, there's another strike and I've chucked my job in. Oh, have you? So I said, yeah. So anyway, I went to bed. When I got up the next, later on in that day, my mum said, well, and I told her. She said, well, you did right. So what are you going to do? I said, I don't know whether I go back in the bloody army or I find another job. She said, well, why don't you go back where you was working when you left to go in the army? She says, why don't you go round at Harry Bradford's? Not Harry Bradford's, LH Hills, and see if he's in business and see if he's going to take you on. So I did. I went round to see him.
This is the painter and decorator.
Yeah. So he took me on as a painter's improver. He took me back on. And that was, his brother was still there. His brother was served in Burma. Bloody.
And how long did you do that for?
Oh, I did it for, I worked for him till he went bankrupt.
Which was?
18 months, 2 years. He went bankrupt. I don't know what it was. I know it was a lot of personal problems he had with his marriage and one thing and another.
So what then?
Well, then I got a job with somebody else. And I went from different builders, different contractors, paint contractors. And eventually I met my missus. And it's a personal story, really. But
I wouldn't tell it then. I wouldn't remember, because we're only really getting you to back into civilian life.
So anyway, what happened was I met my missus, and we found a flat in North London. We moved up to North London. I got a job. I couldn't get a job. It was hard to get a job because I didn't know the area. Anyway, we settled down, and I got a job working as a fettler, and then I didn't like it, so I left that job. We was working on surgical instruments.
Now, when did you settle into a proper career then? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, well, then I went and I worked for I got a job back as a painter and decorator for a firm called Deeds of Hounslow. And I worked for them on and off for years, quite a few years. I did work for them. And I worked for Harry Bradford, and I worked for Sykes. That was a firm, the oldest decorating firm in the UK.
So basically you were a painter and decorator.
Yeah, I did.
That's what you settled
right
down
away
to.
From.
And when did you start being one? So 1955 and...
this would be about 60. 1960.
And you did, that was your career. Yeah. Now, tell me about your reserve service then.
Well, I joined a mate. I was working with a chap.
Did you have to do reserve service straight after you left?
Oh, I did. I did 7 years.
Well, tell me about that first.
I didn't get called up at all. I was on standby for Suez. I got a telegram to tell me to be prepared to stand by, because I was on the regular reserve, 7 years. Standby for Suez Canal. If we call you, you will receive notice within the next 36 hours.
Now, but didn't you have to do anything? You didn't have to go to an annual camp or anything?
No, not then. I was on 5 and 7.
So what about your question of this, what happened about the Suez thing?
Well, I got notice that stand to be prepared. If I don't hear nothing in 36 hours, stand down. So I did, but I got extra money for that, for standing too. They put extra money, and that was when I got paid, because I used to get paid quarterly through the post.
So what did you get paid for being on the reserve?
Not a lot. I suppose about £7 a quarter, something like that. It wasn't a lot. It wasn't very much. But I got paid for every quarter. I got paid by a quarter.
Yeah, but that was only part of it, because you got the biggest part was when you...
Yeah, I in 1967, I was working with this chap, and we was doing a job. I forget where we was, but anyway, we was doing this job. It was a hospital. We was on a hospital, and I met up with him, and he said to me, I told him, like, he said, oh, he said, yeah, we got talking. He said, oh, he said, I'm in the AER.
Now, what's the AER?
Army Emergency Reserve.
Okay.
Now, you all you did on that was 15 days a year. Nothing more, nothing less.
And was there any other unit? I mean, were you in? Was it divided up into it?
Well, it was all different. This AEU was a reserve outfit that was spread right across the British Army.
So where was your bit based?
Well, we weren't based anywhere. All I used to get was what happened was I joined up.
So how'd you join up? What'd you do?
Well, he just gave me the forms for it. I filled them in and signed them, and I told my missus, I said, I'm joining the AER. I said, the money's good. And he told me, he said, well, as he said, the bounty, he said, per year is £400. Tax-free. So, I said, I'll have some of that. And when I come home and told my wife I was going to do this, and I said, I filled the forms in at work. He said he had them at work with him. So I filled them in, and he sent them off. And about a week to a fortnight later, I had a brown envelope come, and it said in there, would I report to, I had to report somewhere. Oh, I went to an RAF medical centre up in Tottenham Court Road, of all places. They sent me to a permanent place. It's RAF Medical Centre for a medical. I passed the medical.
Was it strict or...?
Oh, yeah, it was the normal, same procedure, same as your normal strip off and all that. And I passed, and he told me, the MO said to me, well, you passed. He said, he had all my documents, army documents there. From when I left the army, he had everything there. And, of course, I had my red book with me as well. So he said, you passed. He said, okay. So I said, right. He said, I'll send, these have got to go off. You'll hear from these in the future. So about 4 or 5 weeks later, I had another brown envelope turned up. He said, would I send in my sizes? You don't have to report anywhere. Would I send in my sizes for my battle dress, my kit, as per normal, for shirts, socks, size of boots? It was a pro form. And I filled it in and I just ticked them and put where the boots was, size, 8 medium, always took an 8 medium. Shirt colour, 14, 14 and a half. Battle dress, I think I took a size 7 BD jacket and a size, because they went in numbers, and a size 6 in trousers. Now, they also said, when they sent this stuff to me, they said they was putting me in the RAOC, attached to the Royal Engineers. So I said, right. So
that's the Royal Army Ordnance Corps.
So I didn't argue about that. He said, but you'll be attached to the Royal Engineers.
Which Royal Engineers?
111 Engineer Regiment. Bridge builders they were. So before I got to them, they sent me all the details. But what they did, they sent all my kit in a cardboard box through the post. And in it was a letter. And it said to check it and tick it and sign it if everything was there was correct. But this slip I had, I was to take to the nearest military tailors. And up in Seven Sisters Road, there was an altar. They were called Altar. I remember that plainly. They had shops in most major towns. They were military tailors in those days because the National Service was still about. And they did the tailoring.
And no, National Service wasn't still about.
No, it wasn't, was it?
No, I'm just saying that.
Right, 62 it finished.
Yeah, because this is 60.
But anyway,
whatever. Altar, I just want to make that
Altars,
clear.
That's right. Altars, it was A-L-T-E-R. They were tailors. But they were still about. And they told me where to go. There was one in Seven Sisters Road. And I went to Seven Sisters Road and took me BD and I put it on and showed them. And they said, have you got anything else that need altering? I said, no. So they had both my BDs and the flashes, and they altered the BDs, and the trousers had to be taken up an inch at the bottom. He said, and that's it. He said, and these will be ready in a fortnight. We will let you know when there's to come and pick them up and fit them on and try them, and if it's not quite right, we'll have to do it until it's fits you properly. So I said, can you make them box pleats? He said, yeah, we can do box pleats for you. And take the darts out the front and make it skin tight. So he said, yeah, well, he said, how come you do that? I said, well, I was in the 5th Royal in the skinnings. I said, and our battle dresses fitted as skin tight. All the pockets, the watches were taken out, the tucks, and they fitted box pleats in the back. And I, when I got that, and then I reported, when I got my battle dress and everything was done, I just done the normal. I bought up one pair of boots, kept me other boots for working boots. They told you only have one pair of boots balled up and only do heel and toe, not the rest of the boots, so I did. And it said to me to make sure my webbing was Blanco. You could get Blanco anywhere in those days. And he said, with Blanco, you don't do that. He said, you dye them with it, get Indian ink and do them yourself with Indian ink or whatever you care to do them. So I bought a tin of paint, matte black paint, and painted them matte black. It was easier. And then when I painted them matte black, all my kit matte black. Because apparently this engineer regiment, all their webbing was black, which was I was attached to. So I painted them all matte black. And then he said, all you do is clean them with boot polish. So I got it all ready. And in that time, I went to one camp.
Now, did you have to go to any drill nights at all?
No, none at all. Because everybody that was in the AER were trained soldiers. You could be ex-Navy, but you was already militarily trained. You couldn't go in it without being military trained. Anyway, in the meantime, the government of the day was Harold Wilson. And he done away with the AER.
So before you went on your first camp?
Yeah, he done away with it and called it the TNAVR. But it was still under the same rules. We were under the same rules as the as the AER. And when I first went to my first camp, they were all AER. Every man of these members had all served with this 111 Engineer Regiment.
And that was still who you were with, even when you were TAVR.
Yeah, and they were transferred because they'd done away with it. And this when he made the announcement. The colonel had us on parade because you just went on parade as normal. And you come to attention because you was all trained as you trained soldiers. So he just said, as from today, he said, we are no longer AER, but we're still under the same regulations. We are now the Territorial Army Volunteer Reserve. He said, but we're still only 15 days. We have nothing to do with drill halls or anything to do with drill halls. They are a separate entity, still a separate entity. You are still normally as we carry on where we left off.
Now tell me about your annual camp. So that was with 111
Engineer Regiment.
Where were they?
We used to go report down to Y Regis. Always
where?
Y Regis. W-Y-E Regis. That's down in Dorset, isn't it?
And that was their camp, was it?
That's where we always reported. It was REs. Yeah, it was the REs.
And what did you do there?
Well, when we got there, we used to get there Saturday. By Saturday, you had to be in by 1 o'clock, 1300 hours. You had to be in by 1300 hours. You reported in to the guard room, and you had to be in battle dress with all your kit, take all your kit. And then by 1:30 to 2 o'clock, you'd have all your kit laid out. Now, it depended what the weather was like. If the weather was fine and dry, you laid it out on the square on your ground sheet. And you laid everything out so that it could be inspected and be checked. And what they used to do was new members of the regiment had to parade separately for the first time before you were put in squadrons, because it was in the Royal Engineers, everything is still squadrons like it was in the Armoured Corps. Can I go to the loo?